Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Well, as we mentioned in the last segment, today is the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Could the bad reputation of that war and the war in Afghanistan be one of the reasons for a recruitment problem the military is having these days? Statistics I've read say they came up 15,000 recruits short of their goal last year and are still falling short in 2023. Iraq and Afghanistan, the pandemic, the general labor shortage, too many Americans who don't meet the qualifications to join the military. What combination of factors is contributing? We'll talk now with Major General Johnny K. Davis, commanding general of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command based at Fort Knox, Kentucky. He has served in Iraq, among other international deployments, and has been commanding general of the Army's Joint Modernization Command. He's also been awarded the Bronze Star and Purple Heart, among other honors. General Davis, first of all, thank you for your service, and welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, sir. Good morning, and thanks for having me, sir.
To set the scene, I see the debate about whether the word crisis is applicable now to describe the shortage of recruits compared to the Army's recruitment goals and the military's in general. Is the Army or are the armed forces generally in a recruitment crisis as you see it?
Well, sir, first and foremost, let me set the stage with the prioritization at the Army level. And I'll tell you, the Secretary of the Army's number one priority is recruiting. And of course, with that, I also like to add from the Chief of Staff of the Army, he's said this over and over again, quality over quantity. So going back to your earlier statement, yeah, there's a lot of different, 22 was a challenging year, 23 it's just the current market is challenging, and it's a lot of things at play here, sir. You talked about the market. You talked about COVID. Now let me give you an idea of COVID. So we got about 8,000 recruiters in every zip code, and think about that recruiter not having access to a high school for 2.5 years. So that's an entire generation that we've not been able to interact with compared to, let's say, my upbringing in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and meeting a young recruiter. And of course, qualification is another level. But I'll stop right there to answer some additional questions. But we are fighting for every single superstar out there. And again, we didn't get her overnight, and we're reaching for the stars to get after filling the ranks. So I'll stop right there.
By the numbers, how would you describe the shortfall?
As in, well, sir, I can't foretell the future, but I will say we're doing better than we did last year. And every day that we improve, it gets us more and more closer to the Secretary's goal and the Chief of Staff of the Army's goal of really filling the ranks.
Well, what were the numbers last year?
About 15,000 shortfall last year.
And how different is the issue in different branches of the military?
Sir, I don't know all the details regarding each of my sisters. I know we talk regularly, but all of us are facing a challenging recruiting environment. That's your point. What we're seeing are the same difficulties that my partners in the Navy, the Air Force, but of course, in terms of scale, we certainly have a larger force and have to bring in more recruits.
What's for the background information of my listeners who don't follow these things closely, what's the total number of troops currently serving in the armed forces today, roughly, if you know?
Yeah, sir. I would say between 450,000-470,000. That's just active component when you include National Guard and Reserve. You got about your army, your total army is a little over 1 million soldiers.
And many in our audience here in the New York area who are skeptical of the military in general and the Pentagon budget in particular, this has come up on the show recently with a number of guests, may be wondering, why should I care about a recruitment shortage? Our country has been too militarily adventurous for generations now. These critics would say we need money for domestic issues. And anyway, we don't fight wars anymore with lots of troops in person, like in the two world wars or even Vietnam. What would you say to any of that?
Well, sir, you, of course, you need to have a armed force in case, you know, when called upon as a nation to protect the nation. But we'll also remember what the armed forces are also there to do. Yes, you, there's if called upon, we can deploy, fight and in the environment. But let's remember what our Army does. And I've served in the National Guard in college years ago, and of course on active duty. But we, you know, we do a lot of things. So every, you know, national emergency, whether it's a hurricane or any event, whether it's the fires out west or drought, when tornadoes, any natural disaster, you'll see your sons and daughters out there in uniform serving their communities. That's what you see each and every day. And yes, we all know that, of course, when called upon, we will absolutely do our duty. But just think of what, you know, when you think of an event, a natural disaster, you when you see on television or you'll see our American men and women in uniform helping out their fellow citizens.
And listeners, if you're a veteran and you think young people should enlist so the military can meet its goals, call in. Or if you don't, or if you have any comment or question on the military's recruitment problems these days, for Major General Johnny K. Davis, Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And let's take a phone call right now. Here's Roland in Washington, D.C. Roland, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing all right.
Good. First off, thank you, General, for your service. I served in the recruiting command in the Northeast in the years following the Vietnam War, and it was very difficult to get very intelligent young people to join an organization which had just fought a war that didn't make any sense to people. When my brother got hurt in Iraq and we had to be airlifted to Wiesbaden, I called my mother to tell her, and she said, "Why is your brother in Iraq?" And at the end of it, I mean, it didn't make any sense to my mother. Young people today have the internet. They're more socially conscious. We have a lack of shared sacrifice because almost the military is viewed very differently than it was 20 or 30 years ago. During the Iraq call-up, I saw a 50-year-old sergeant who was a reservist who'd been ordered back to active duty painting on the side of an M1A1 battle tank that was about to be shipped to Iraq. Don't forget 9/11. And I said, "Sergeant, that had nothing to do with Iraq." And he said, "Sir, then why are we going to Iraq?" And I think this kind of mixed message is not lost on the target people that I was trying to get into the Army when I worked in a recruiting command. Thank you, sir.
Roland, thank you very much. General?
Well, yeah, thanks, sir, for that comment. I will tell you, and thank you for your service. I also served in Iraq. I've served in Afghanistan. I've served in many, many theaters. And I tell you, when called upon, that is so important. But when you talk about the current, you know, generation. So, example, you know, I have children, and my oldest daughter, she's also in the United States Army and deployed at this time. Second daughter served in the Marine Corps. But yes, it is really trying to communicate with them about the power of service and what it and the opportunities it provides. And I know there's some potential misperceptions out there about military life. You know, I went to an event recently in Indianapolis, and I spoke to a couple of future, you know, prospects who were thinking about service. And one of the questions are, "Hey, sir, you know, I thought if I joined the Army, I can't have a car. Well, I don't know where that came from. That's not true. Hey, and another one. Hey, can I have a pet? So I'm totally taken aback by this. And the last one was, and this was all in one event, different time, sir. The other one was, hey, I heard that I will not get paid until I complete basic training and advanced training, and that's not true at all. So these things I think are having these misperceptions or misinformation that's traveling out there is, I think, impacting this youth. And again, without having the recruiter touch points or engagement with them during COVID has not helped at all. And that's what we're focused on, to raise that awareness, because that's so very important. I mean, the questions that I received, I know, are pretty much hard to believe, sir, and I'm sure you would agree. But that's circulating out there, and I need your help to really, share your story and also tell them about the opportunities that the service provides.
How do you have a pet if you're living in a barracks?
Yes, sir. So not everyone lives in the barracks. So if you're in the barracks, in a barracks environment. So let's say in your first, as the E1, E3, if you're living inside the barracks, certain policies prevent a pet. But if you are a married soldier and you live off post or you live on post housing, you can absolutely own a pet.
The caller was emphasizing the difficulty that he had as a recruiter after Vietnam and relating it to how people feel about U.S. deployments now after Iraq and Afghanistan. And here it is, the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion today. And, both parties tend to praise the military but call the Iraq War an epic mistake at best, imperial aggression at worst, but mistake at best, that cost thousands of American troops' lives, not to mention all the injuries. So where's the trust that people won't become cannon fodder for some politician's dreams of conquest or overreaction? How do you, as someone who served in Iraq, feel about the war as it affected and affects the U.S., and how much do you think that's contributing to the recruitment problems?
Well, sir, thanks. And being a veteran of both Afghanistan and Iraq, and what I will tell you is I loved my service. I loved serving the men and women to my left and right who were with me in tough times and also carrying the hardship. But in terms of, what we're seeing on the ground is not attributed to that. What we're being told, and this is on the minds of the younger generation, hey, if I serve, of course, safety, health and safety, or I put my life on hold, or it may hamper my, opportunities. And I will share that's not. The opportunities we provide are unlike any other in terms of where the doors that may open in terms of future, college, investing in yourself, service. I can go on and on, but yes, sir. I have served. I love my service to this country. I love serving the men and women to my left and right. And when called upon, I deployed and served with honor with the men and women to my left and right, to include service with that recruiter, former recruiter.
You mentioned before that the Secretary of the Army's emphasis in dealing with this shortage is quality over quantity of recruits. And I think Roy in Fairfield, Connecticut, has a comment or a question about that. Roy, you're on WNYC with Major General Johnny Williams, head of the Army's Recruitment Command. Johnny K. Davis, I'm sorry, Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command. Roy, hi there. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, Brian. Thank you, General. I'm a 34-year veteran of the United States Army Reserve and prior Connecticut Army National Guard. I would say the biggest problem that we're going to have with recruiting is a lot of the the individuals that would be interested are not physically ready. You see podcasts with the former TRADOC commander. He had been a West Point grad and had taught physical ed when he was at West Point, had gotten his master's in anatomy and physiology. And he stressed that, that's the security risk that we're going to face going forward, because especially in the South, where you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck in terms of a lot of recruits, that's where the health crisis is becoming really when it comes to health and physical fitness and nutrition. And the second thing I would say is, my years being in, I shadowed a recruiter many times, and he stressed to me that even when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I don't need you. I need somebody who's 20, who's 18, who's going to speak the story of the United States Army. And I put it to you. I think that you're really engaged. I saw you on a Heritage Foundation podcast, and I think you're doing a great job, and you're asking the right questions and going to the recruiters. But I think one of the best things that you could do is go after young people, get incentives for young soldiers to shadow recruiters more in a comprehensive way, as we have sometimes done in the past. Thank you.
Thank you, Roy. General?
Yeah, sir. And thanks for that. You talk about the challenges, and the qualification are certainly daunting when you look at it. Only 23% of those between the ages of 17 and 21 are eligible, whether it's academic, whether it's physical, whether it's multitude moral, legal. But one of the things,
can I jump in on that? Because that's going to be shocking.
Yeah,
to a lot of the audience. Is that different than in the past? Is young America today a more out-of-shape America, a more less-educated America? How different is this than in the past?
Well, sir, we've seen declines in that qualified. So, yes, it is dropping. Whether or not it's attributed to, it could be a lot of different things. But what I'm telling you from the number of potential recruits that come in, that qualified number, sir, is decreasing every year. Now, what we're doing to try to address that, because we can't stand by and watch this number continue to fall, one particular thing that we've done is called the Future, Soldier Prep Course. And what that's done is we've actually, in terms of an academic, if they would not otherwise qualify, we would bring them on active duty in a status that allows us to invest in them from an academic perspective. So we'll bring them into an environment, structured environment, with the men and women who are also having some academic difficulties. We'll teach them classes, math, sentence structure, writing. And what we've seen is that after about 30 days, the standards or the academic outcomes are 20 points higher when taking the ASVAB. So, and we're witnessing about a 95% success rate. So what we're doing is investing in this youth that would not otherwise qualify. So this is eye-opening. I mean, we've not done this in the recent past, and we're really starting to invest in that. And so that's the academic. And then we also have a physical, piece that if they're 2 or 3% over in body fat, we will also bring them in and also invest in them. And this is not, changing their total, what you would think some crash diet. No, we bring them in. We do physical fitness. We invest in them in a bunch of different areas. And before you know it, they are actually doing very well each and every week. And that's a high 90%+ success rate. So yes, we can't stand by and watch the number of qualified continue to drop. And sir, it is. And what we've done is invest in this population with the future soldier prep course. So I'll stop right.
It's a sorry commentary on the health and fitness of young America, whether or not anybody in the listening audience cares about Army recruitment goals, isn't it, that you have to deal with this at all? All right. Well, I won't make you respond to that. I guess it was more of a statement in reaction to what you were saying. A few more minutes on the military's recruitment shortage with Major General Johnny K. Davis, Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, based at Fort Knox, Kentucky. Do they still keep the gold there, by the way? That's probably what a lot of lay people think first when they hear Fort Knox.
So, sir, there's a lot of things kept here. I won't go into the details, but yes, it is the
depository.
It's still the gold depository.
Nancy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with General Davis. Hello.
Hi, did you say Nancy?
Yeah, it's you, Nancy.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, I wasn't. Thank you, General Davis, for your service, first of all. I'm just concerned, if I were to read an advertising brochure for joining the armed services and under the category women and not feel that something was really being done to protect so many, and I don't know statistically, I suppose it's not comparative to the rest of the country and normal life, civilian life, a huge amount, but the women who have been abused, sexually bullied, who have quote-unquote suicided and not received justice, their families have not received justice, it's still very unclear, you know, what's happening to women in the armed services. And I'm glad your daughters have had positive experiences, but could you address what's going on to improve that situation?
Ma'am, and I will tell you, first of all, thanks for the question. And your Army takes this very seriously. And I have two daughters. My oldest daughter is on active duty right now. And of course, like any parent, is first of all proud of my daughter's service, but I'm also, as a parent, always, thinking about her. And I'll tell you, she has been in 10 years and all the soldiers to her left and right are just wonderful. And she loves her service. So we take this seriously big time, and we do not play games. And if there's, you know, an area that needs to be, investigated or taken a look at, we will immediately jump and execute that. And I just wanted to share that with you, from a parent of a female soldier.
Let me follow up on that. And Nancy, thank you for raising that. Follow up on that with an MSNBC opinion article that is on the web right now. Headline, new data shatters the right-wing myth that a, quote, woke army is deterring recruits. And it says the Associated Press obtained data from a survey of thousands of 16 to 28-year-olds that was commissioned by the Army and carried out by a private research contractor. According to the AP, on average, only 5% of the respondents in the surveys listed wokeness as an issue, compared with 13% who said they believe that women and minorities will face discrimination and not get the same opportunities. So what do you say to the results of that survey and those right-wing politicians, as described here, who are saying the Army has a wokeness problem?
Sir, what I will add, and I won't, I mean, I would say that's not what I see on the ground in terms of feedback from my recruiters and the applicants. I won't touch on, that's very, I think I'll let the politicians work with that one. But what I see in uniform on the ground is not that. Their questions are, hey, what opportunities can I pursue? How does this help me, after my term of service? Can I, you know, take these skills with me if I stay in or if I exit and join the workforce? But that's what we are. That's what I see on the ground. And we're very diverse and we offer, you know, great opportunities.
One more call. Nelson in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Major General Johnny K. Williams, head of the Army's Recruiting Command. Hi, Nelson.
How's it going?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good, sir. Don't call me sir. I work for a living, sir. I used to be an enlisted man for 5 years. So,
yes, sir.
Is that an inside Army joke? I don't know. Don't call me sir. I work for a living.
It is an inside. Non-commissioned officers are always saying that. Don't call me sir. I work for a living.
Okay.
it's an inside Army joke. So, sir, the problem that I have with this voluntary enlistment is that half of 1% of the nation's population serves. So half of 1%, and it's usually, and not usually, but there's a great percentage of that is family. Like my great uncle served, my father served, I have a brother and a sister. We all served. My sister and my brother did 20 and 22 years in the Navy. Her husband did 24. My aunt did 20 in the Navy. My son served also in the Navy. I was the only one that served in the Army. I'm not sure why, but that's neither here nor there. So my problem is that we should make everyone serve because it makes people better citizens. And it would diminish the political will to go to war for no reason when a senator's son is also serving.
Congressman, what do you say?
Congressman.
Yes, Nelson, thank you very much. What you're making me think about, Nelson, is that my former congressman, now retired, Charles Rangel, used to call for a renewed draft because what we had during the height of the Iraq and Afghanistan deployments, in his view, was an economic draft that caused poor people of color to be overrepresented at risking their lives for their country, as well as it was too easy for politicians to send us to war, like Nelson is saying, calling from the Bronx, without senators' kids and so forth also having to serve. So what do you say to the caller, and do you agree that there's been an economic draft, in effect, that has caused an over-representation of poor people of color?
Well, sir, what I would add is I'm part of the all-volunteer force, and this year will be the 50th anniversary of the all-volunteer force, and I will tell you it's a powerful, all-volunteer force. Now, 1% have served. That data we are all very familiar with. But if you think about it, let me take you back to, let's say, you know, my grandfather was a World War II vet. Since then, you know, the vet population is declining. But I can remember, you know, when I was a young, 10-year-old in Wisconsin with my grandfather, I knew mostly all of the other homeowners in our neighborhood were mostly also World War II or Korea vets. That's not the case now, based on the scale of service compared to back then to now. So that's why, 1% is a very small number. And then referring to the family, I think more children of servicemen than join the military. Because they're more aware of the opportunities of military service. I never asked my kids to serve, but because they were exposed to it each and every day and we moved all over the nation, I think they became very comfortable with the friendships that they've had are still true to this day. You know, my daughter's best friend was, they were 6-year-olds and we lived right next to each other, and now they're in their 30s and best friends to this very day. So, and that, that pride of service. So yeah, do we want more to serve? Absolutely. And that's why I think the awareness and sharing first of all, thanks for your service, sir, and sharing your your story, your military service story, to others will also bring that awareness and hopefully increase that propensity or the knowledge of service.
And we just have 30 seconds left, but on the economic draft?
Economic draft.
Is there one that causes an overrepresentation of poor people of color putting their lives at risk for their country?
No, I don't, sir. I'm not seeing that. What I see is a armed forces, especially an army that looks more like the nation, representative of the nation. That's what I see.
Major General Johnny K. Davis, Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, based at Fort Knox, Kentucky. Thank you so much for coming on today and talking about the recruiting shortage that you're dealing with right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.